Yes, thanks a lot for the invitation. I'm having a really great time here. It's my first time at PI, but it's super nice. So I will talk about single-shot interpretations of von Neumann entropy. And let me start with sort of a general wisdom in quantum information. So there's the sort of general wisdom that whenever we have operational or information processing tasks in an IID limit, so where we have many identical and uncorrelated copies of some system, then these tasks are usually controlled by von Neumann entropy or its relatives like quantum relative entropy, mutual information, conditional mutual information, and so on. On the other hand, there's also the single shot setting, which applies when we only have a single copy of our system and we do want to do something on the single copy. And these tasks are then usually controlled by smooth Rennie entropies, like min and max entropies, max mutual information, and so on. And the very basic question that this talk is about is whether this IID limit is really necessary to give an operational interpretation to von Neumann entropy or not, and or other standard entropic quantities, maybe. And to give you maybe a motivation for this and why this could be interesting, we can go to many-body physics, where we have the area law conjecture, which states that if we have a lattice system described by local gapped Hamiltonian, and we look at the ground state of the system, then the entanglement entropy is measured by the von Neumann entropy of some subregion A is bounded by something that's proportional to the surface area of the region. And this is in contrast to typical states, which fulfill that the entanglement entropy grows like the volume of this area. But it's not so clear what the operational meaning of this area law actually is, because in many-body physics, we're usually not concerned with many copies of a many-body system, but with a single system and a single large system. Okay. And maybe a bit more speculative and something where I'm not an expert, but I guess something similar arises in ADS CFT, where, for example, this Biot-Takayanagi formula tells us how to interpret the usual entanglement entropy on the CFT of some region in terms of the area of a minimal surface in the bulk. And again, one can ask, okay, what's the sort of operational interpretation on the CFT side of this entropy? Okay, and in this talk, I will have two parts. The first part is really about giving a single-shot interpretation to area laws in many-body physics. And the second part will be a bit more abstract and general and kind of resource theoretic in mindset, where we give a single-shot interpretation of von Neumann entropy using so-called catalysts. And I will present a few results. I will present this catalytic entropy conjecture in the end and hopefully point to quite a few open problems. So if you're still looking for problems, I hope I have a few of them for you. Okay, so let us get started with this area law. So to be a bit more precise, what we'll have in mind is that we have some regular lattice of sides here, like this rectangular grid. To each side, we associate a finite dimensional Hilbert space, and we make the convention that logarithms are always taken with base of this dimension of the local Hilbert space. And so if we have some region A, then we'll call the complement of this region A superscript C, and the surface area I will denote by the cardinality of the boundary of this area. And we will need a few other sets that are associated to such a region in the following. So we will often consider an annulus, which is defined by this region. So we will just consider all the sides that are a distance at most k away from the boundary, but are inside of A. And I will just refer to this set as the annulus in the following. And the remaining sides in A, I will call the bulk of A. Okay. And importantly, for large smooth regions that we are actually interested in, this annulus of width A contains roughly k times the surface area many sides. And there's a Hilbert space dimension which is exponential in this, right? Just d to the number of sides in these animals. Okay. So then let me restate this area law conjecture just to be sure. So if we have any pure ground state of a gap local lattice Hamiltonian, then there exists some constant k such that the entanglement entropy of some region is upper bounded by k times the surface area. And it's very important that this is really only a non-trivial statement when we consider large smooth regions. For example, if we would have a very small region, then we could just choose k large enough so that it's actually larger than the volume. Or if we have like a fractal shaped region, then also the surface area will actually be comparable to the volume and we don't get any interesting statement. So in the following, we should always have in mind large regions on the lattice that are sort of smooth. Okay, so how can we interpret this area law conjecture? Maybe with what we know already. So if we had many copies of our system, then we could get some intuition via some sort of Schumacher compression. So if we have many IRD copies, then we can compress the quantum information contained in some region, which is measured by the entropy, of course, into a smaller system, namely one that can carry this amount of entropy, and this would just be such an annulus of width k. And in the asymptotic limit, we could thus really map this state essentially to a state on the annulus tensor producted with the pure state in the bulk. Now, the problem is, of course, that this is an IRD interpretation. So in this single shot, it's not clear whether we can do anything that remotely looks like this. And what I want to present to you is a result which shows that indeed we can do exactly this in a single shot. And this is the following theorem. So, and we call this holographic compression, maybe for lack of a better name, but I'll come back to that later. So consider any pure state that fulfills an area law. Then for any epsilon that you choose, you can find a unitary which only acts on this region A, and which has the effect of disentangling all the sides in the bulk with the rest of the system. And this to an error epsilon in fidelity, and this annulus on which the information gets compressed now has a width which is inversely proportional to epsilon. So you may think, okay, this is a very large width if epsilon is very small, but importantly, this does not depend on the system size or on the size of the region. So again, for very small regions, this annulus for any fixed epsilon is arbitrarily small compared to the volume of the region. And it turns out actually that the proof of this statement is very simple. So I will actually now show you the proof of this statement. Yes?
Your state on the lattice satisfying an area law, and yes, you don't assume anything about Hamiltonian.
Exactly, I don't assume anything about Hamiltonian.
Then there is this A such that it also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe this is important to stress. So I don't assume anything about the Hamiltonian, just any pure state on lattice, which fulfills the area law. And this UA really just maps the state, so it only acts on this region A, and it maps the state to one which is a tensor product within of this bulk with the rest of the system.
So there is no size dependence
in the error.
It doesn't depend on the size of A.
No, it doesn't depend on the size of A, exactly.
Yes. This is not dependent. This is what Benny said. Yeah. Not dependent on the ground state of a local Hamiltonian.
No, it's really just from the area law alone. Exactly. Whether one can get stronger results, if one actually assumes that it's the ground state of a local Hamiltonian, I don't know. But here, I really only want to use the area law. Oh. Any more questions, maybe, for now? I think the statement will also become clearer once I've presented the proof, which is very simple. So to prove this, we consider a Schmidt decomposition. So we do a Schmidt decomposition between A and the complement of A. And let's take the convention that we order the Schmidt values in non-increasing order. And I will denote the Schmidt rank by R. And I will also define this projector, which is just the projector onto the subspace that is spanned by the M, by the eigenvectors of the reduced density matrix corresponding to the M largest Schmidt values. Okay. Then we could imagine for a moment that it could happen that the Schmidt rank is actually smaller than the Hilbert space dimension of this annulus, okay, which is again roughly d to the boundary area. In this case, if the Schmidt rank would be smaller than the Hilbert space dimension of the annulus, it's clear that we could always find a unitary which simply maps each of these vectors here in the Schmidt decomposition to some vector supported on the annulus, tensored with a fixed pure state in the bulk. Why would this be possible? Because, well, there are only R of these vectors that we need. If the dimension of this annulus is larger than R, then we can, of course, always do such a basis transformation. And just to note, this projector would, if we choose M equal to R, would also be mapped to a projector on this annulus, tensored with a pure state in the bulk. And similarly, the reduced density matrix would be mapped exactly to one supported on the annulus, tensored with a pure state.
So this argument, there's nothing so special about annulus.
No, you could just pick any region with the same volume. Yeah, this will be the same for all what I say. It's just to make it easier to interpret, I will always pick this annulus. Okay, now, of course, the problem is that the Schmidt rank of the state will usually not be smaller than the dimension of this annulus, right? I mean, this is the essential problem. And so somehow the state usually, certainly doesn't fit exactly into the annulus. Right? So we somehow have to approximate it by a state with a small Schmidt rank. Okay. The problem is that the only information about the state that we have is its entropy. Okay. So we have to somehow solve the following problem. We have some probability distribution, and then we cut it after the mth value, and we renormalize it, and we have to ask what's the error that we did. And the only information that we have is the entropy of the distribution. Okay. And of course, the intuition is that somehow, if the entropy is very small, then most of the weight should be carried by very few eigenvalues, where small and few is still to be determined somehow. Okay. And this problem is actually solved by a very simple lemma, which is the following. So if you take any probability distribution and you sum up the m largest entries, then you get something which is lower bounded by 1 minus the entropy of the full distribution divided by log m. And so this is really an extremely simple lemma to prove. So Alex managed to prove it in like 10 minutes and 2 lines. But it turns out that this is sufficient to prove whatever we want to prove. Okay, and maybe just some remarks. So due to the monotonicity of Rennie entropies, this lemma also holds if you replace the entropy here by a Rennie entropy with alpha smaller than 1. But it does not hold, so there are counterexamples if you have alpha larger than 1. And for those who are interested in quantum cryptography, one can also reformulate this as this inequality for the smooth Max entropy. But I guess this is only for specialists that like smooth Max entropies. Okay. So what does this lemma tell us? Well, it tells us the following corollary. So let psi be any bipartite pure state on A and its complement. Then we consider the state where we just cut off all the the Schmidt values after the first m largest ones, and we renormalize the state. And then this lemma tells us that the fidelity with the original state of this approximation is larger than 1 minus the entropy divided by log m. Okay, and with this we can now easily prove the theorem. So the first step is we fix some error. Then we use the area law, which tells us that the annulus of width roughly k over epsilon has a Hilbert space dimension larger than d to the entropy divided by epsilon. And we define this number to be m. Then we know there exists a unitary, and in fact many, because there's a gauge freedom in this unitary, which map the corresponding projector here exactly to the annulus. Because now by assumption, m is not larger than the Hilbert space dimension of the annulus. And so it also maps this approximate state exactly to a tensor product. And now we can use the lemma and ask what happens if we just apply this unitary to the state that we started with. And then we find that this is just the fidelity between this state and the original state, which is lower by 1 minus the entropy divided by log m. And by our choice of m, this is just 1 minus epsilon. And this proves the theorem. So let me restate it. We have any pure state on a lattice and any epsilon larger than 0. Then for any sort of large region A, there exists a unitary on A, which disentangles the bulk degrees of freedom from the rest, and does this with an epsilon with an error of epsilon. And the width of this annulus is just k over epsilon. Okay. So far I've only talked about the state. But actually, of course, not only the state is mapped to the annulus, but in fact any operator that is supported within this subspace PM. So if we have any operator which would be exactly supported in the subspace, then we can apply the unitary. We get an operator that is supported on the boundary, tensored this fixed pure state, which is arbitrary. And thus we could correlate expectation values in the original state just as well on the boundary. And we can also do so with correlation functions of such operators. And in fact, more generally, this would also be true for operators which commute with PM instead of being supported within PM. Now, of course, there are some interesting problems. For example, if we now actually consider a local Hamiltonian, do local operators approximately fulfill this condition? So could we compute correlation functions of local operators in the bulk on the boundary?
Sorry?
No, the statement is you pick any operator which on the Hilbert space of this region is supported in the subspace.
Subspace.
The subspace is the subspace spanned by the m largest eigenvectors of the reduced density matrix. It's like if you think of entanglement Hamiltonians, it's like the low energy subspace.
Right? So do you have an intuition for what the Schmidt basis have to look like, or whatever question? Do you have some intuition for what the Schmidt basis be like?
No, unfortunately not. No, I have no idea how to, whether this is true or not. But somehow the intuition would be that the largest eigenvectors corresponding to the largest eigenvalue of the reduced density matrix somehow correspond to some low energy subspace. But I don't know, so this is speculative. And similarly, of course, how much can this mapping preserve locality, and what's the complexity of this unitary? But for these, of course, now one really has to look at the Hamiltonians involved, and one cannot just argue from the state, no. Okay. We can also take a step back and look a bit more abstractly at this problem from a quantum information perspective. So I guess all of you know what a quantum Markov chain is, but in case you do not, it's simply a tripartite state where if I trace out, say, system A here, then there exists a channel on B which recovers the full quantum state. And it's well known that this is equivalent to the fact that the conditional mutual information vanishes. So what have we have here effectively done is considered a setting of sort of rotated quantum Markov chains, where we are first allowed to apply unitary to AB, and the state is only a Markov chain after we apply this unitary, which sort of compresses the information into B, which in our case would be a small annulus. And our result then essentially says that states fulfilling area law are approximate rotated quantum Markov chains. An interesting question I find is whether there's any simple criterion, like in this case, which decides whether a state is such a rotated quantum Markov chain. Again, I don't know. Okay. So to summarize on this part, we've seen that an area law in terms of von Neumann entropy is actually sufficient to show that you can approximately compress the information contained in a region into its boundary. And for any error, the ground state somehow defines a subspace and hence a subalgebra of operators which are mapped exactly to this boundary. And there are a few open questions on this mapping in particular. And all these results follow directly from this very simple probability distribution. From this very simple lemma. Okay. Now I would like to go to the second part of this talk. And I would like to start this talk, the second part, with an extremely simple question, and it, in fact, a series of questions. The first one is very trivial. So suppose I give you any state rho, and I tell you you can do any unitary, which states can you reach? Okay. Well, I guess all of you know this, namely all states with the same spectrum. Now let's make this slightly more difficult. Now assume that you also can use a maximal mixed state of dimension that you can choose, but let's say it's larger than the dimension of the state. But I put a condition, namely I put the condition that you have to return the maximal mixed state in a maximal mixed state after you applied the unitary, but you can still choose the unitary that you want to apply. Which states can you reach? And the answer here is that these are all states which are majorized by your initial state. I guess you know this from entanglement theory. And maybe a small fun fact, it turns out that it's always sufficient to choose the dimension of the maximally mixed state as the square root of the dimension of the system. It's something we've proven recently. This will not be important for the rest of the talk. Okay, and so the role of this maximally mixed state is that somehow of a catalyst here. So it doesn't change, but allows you to do something that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. Okay, now let's make this a bit more difficult. Now, maybe one thing, from the data processing inequality, you find that this implies that the Rennie entropies can only increase in any such transition. And this is true for all Rennie entropies. Okay, so now let's make it a bit even more difficult. Now we replace the maximal mixed state by an arbitrary state and that you can choose. Okay? So now I ask you the following question. Suppose you can choose sigma and you can choose u, which states can you reach? So in case you know the answer, I would be very interested. I will not answer this, but I will present a conjecture later. But maybe let's look at an example just to be sure that we really understand what we mean here. Suppose we have a three-dimensional probability distribution given by these p's, and say we want to look at a transition that we can do with a two-dimensional catalyst given by these q's. And for simplicity, let's consider this classical case where we only do permutations on the global state. So we just do permutations within this joint probability table. And to be concrete, let's even pick some numbers. So let's say P is given by 1/2, 1/2, 0. So that we get these entries in our table. And now let us choose some permutation, okay? Say, for example, we want to exchange these two boxes, okay? This is certainly one allowed operation. Okay, we can do this. So far, we haven't determined the catalyst. And indeed, this will now be determined by this permutation. So now we solve the equations that determine that these two, or the column sums here will be the same on the right and on the left, and we will get some numbers. And in this case, for example, we'd get 1/3 and 2/3, and we see that the initial distribution is mapped from 0, 1/2, 1/2, to 1/6, 1/6, and 2/3. Now, is there anything interesting about this mapping? Well, in fact, there is, namely that the largest probability increased. So this means that the min entropy, which is just minus the log of the largest probability, decreased. So this means already that the conditions that we are getting from majorization in the state, in the case where sigma was just a maximally mixed state, can be violated if you just pick sigma as arbitrary catalysts. Okay. So again, we want to solve this in all generality. The problem is that I don't have the answer, but I will present a conjecture about the answer later. However, we can solve something which is an even more general set of transitions. And these are the following. So suppose you have some well-controlled lab, and there's also some uncontrolled decohering environment. And so in your lab, you can do perfectly coherent unitaries, and you can take these catalysts from the environment, and there's now a different condition from before, namely not that the catalyst remains the same, but it's only when it's brought back to the environment that it decoheres to the same state as before, so that you could then use it again for future transitions like these. Okay. Okay. So what are the transitions that one can do here? And I will denote the possible transitions by this arrow with deke for decoherence. And just to write it out in all glory once, so the condition is this. You can map rho to rho prime if there exists a unitary and catalyst such that the system is mapped to rho prime, and the catalyst is mapped to a state that after it decoheres, it goes back to its initial state. And of course, here the decoherence is just in the initial eigenbasis of sigma. And which states can be reached? Well, this is a problem that we have solved. And the answer is given by the following theorem. Namely, you can go from rho to rho prime whenever the von Neumann entropy of rho prime is larger than that of rho, and the rank doesn't decrease. So this is one characterization of the von Neumann entropy, which doesn't require any IID limit whatsoever. Right? It's single shot, but it still has this decoherence process going on here. But what can you use it for? Well, the nice thing here is that, of course, once you do one transition, the catalyst returns to its initial state, and you can use it again, right? So take a new copy of rho, you map it to rho prime, and you do this again and again and again, how many times you want. And the only condition is that the entropy of rho prime is larger than that of rho. So one thing you can use this for is for cooling, for example. So let's assume rho is a product state of 2 times psi, I guess, and the entropy of psi is smaller than 1/2 of log 2. And let's assume rho prime is maximally mixed tensor state that's arbitrarily close to the to a pure state, say spin down, but it has full rank. Then you can map this initial state to this state. So you effectively cool 1/2 of the system to 0 temperature. And you can do this with as many copies as you want. So you can cool 1/2 of your system, which can be as many systems as you want, to 0 temperature, while heating up the rest to effectively infinite temperature. And this is very much like algorithmic cooling, just that we don't require an IID limit to do it. And in fact, the sort of the bounds that you get in the asymptotic limit from algorithmic cooling are exactly the same that we get here in the single shot. Of course, there's a downside. I mean, the downside is that all these rho primes will now be correlated. So you will not get a tensor product state of these rho primes, but you get some state which has multipartite correlations over all the n copies that you have. However, I mean, since this state is arbitrarily close to a pure state, you also know that the correlations with other systems will be very small. Okay, so this is what you can already do with such a decohering environment. Now, let us get back to the original question. So let's get rid of this environment again and go to this original set of transitions where we have just a catalyst, and the only thing we can do is unitary, which correlates the two. And then the conjecture is that you can do exactly the same transitions as before that you could do with the decohering environment. And so I would note this by this arrow, and then the conjecture is what we call this catalytic entropy conjecture. So it states that if the spectrum of rho and rho prime are different, then you can go from rho to rho prime whenever the entropy of rho prime is larger than that of rho, and the rank doesn't decrease. So this would be like a true single-shot characterization of von Neumann entropy, if it turns out to be true. Now, of course, you should and probably do ask, why do we believe that this is true? And the reason is essentially given by the following two results. The first result is sort of a weak solution to this conjecture. So now I allow you to look at these sort of special transitions, or we look at these sort of special transitions. So now the system is rho tensor maximum mixed state, which is mapped to rho prime tensor maximum mixed state, but we demand that there are no correlations between the two. And then we can show that such a transition is possible whenever the entropy increases and the rank doesn't decrease. So these are a subset of the transitions that we consider in this catalytic entropy conjecture, but not all of them. But we can use these to actually already learn something very interesting. And this is the following. So if you have worked with resource theories before, you probably know what a monotone is. So monotone is any function that is monotonic with respect to some partial order, right? So here the partial order is given by the state transitions, and we consider functions that can only increase under such state transitions. And we call such a function additive if it's additive over tensor products. And then we can prove that if f is any such monotone on these catalytic transitions, only one of the following statements is true. Either the increase of entropy is equivalent to an increase of this function, or the function is either is non-additive or discontinuous. So in other words, the only continuous additive monotonic function is equivalent to the von Neumann entropy. It's a fact given as an affine function of the von Neumann entropy. In particular, this rules out all Rényi entropies as monotones. And in fact, it pretty much rules out any other entropy than the von Neumann entropy, because all entropies that we know as, or pretty much all entropies at least, are additive and continuous.
So it doesn't rule out?
Sorry?
Is there anything that it doesn't?
We don't know. I guess weird functions doesn't rule out discontinuous functions, but so for example, one function which would be the monotone is somehow a function which you define separately for any transition, right? Just arbitrarily. But yeah, I'm not aware of any reasonable function which is not ruled out by this, apart from the von Neumann entropy. Yeah. Okay. And yeah, the essential reason for this result is that one thing you can always do with these transitions is that you decorrelate two systems. And this requires any such monotone that is additive also to be sub-additive. And essentially, the von Neumann entropy is the only sub-additive entropic function that we know. Okay.
This is a conjecture or this is a theorem?
And this is a theorem. Yes, this is a theorem which is proven. We believe we have proven it Okay, so let me summarize. I presented essentially two set of results to you. The first one is that an area law implies that one can compress the information contained in a region of space in a lattice into its boundary. It follows from this very simple lemma, which I invite you to try to prove. It's really very quick once you know the statement. And the second one are these results about state transitions using catalysts. So we can have this new catalytic cooling protocol, which does some of algorithmic cooling without requiring IID limit. And we have this catalytic entropy conjecture, which would give a very simple characterization of the von Neumann entropy. Okay, so thanks a lot for your attention. And if you have any other questions, I'm happy to listen.
I have one more question.
You know, okay. For instance,
the height of a Lorentz curve?
Yes.
Which is one of them? Is that
additive or not? The height of a Lorentz curve?
I don't know.
Oh, this would be interesting, yes. But I guess I'm a bit doubtful because Lorentz curves essentially come from majorization and you can violate all the majorization constraints. So I would be surprised if that's still a monotone here. Ah, okay, true. No, only those that correspond to any entropies. Yes. Yes.
Well, last result, is there any implication to storage capacity of quantum pools, for example?
You mean of this one?
Like something. I remember that for the case of stereo example.
Mm-hmm. I see, yeah. I don't know, I'd be very interested to discuss this. I'm not an expert on codes, so I don't really know, but maybe.
Maybe there is probably some paper derived driving the bound. I remember they have some theorem, it's called holographic lemma.
Okay. Well, maybe it's the same.
In their case, it's stereo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, this would be very interesting. Thank you.
Okay.